We don't have to be engaging all the time in deep, long-term reflection. There are times when heads down mode is what's necessary, right? You're executing, you're doing it. But the problem comes when that's all we do.
Hey, my name is Jenna Kutcher, and I am obsessed with all things business, marketing, numbers, and helping you to navigate both the messy and the magical seasons of this thing called life. I'm a small town mama who took a $300 camera, grew a successful photo biz, and now I work from home and run a seven-figure online business. I teach you the tried and true secrets to building a career you adore. Shy away from the real talk? No way. Money, hardship, growth, loss, and marketing are all topics we discuss here. Think of this as your one-stop shop for happy hour with a gal pal mixed with business school. Pull up a seat, make sure you're cozy, and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Gold Digger Podcast. Are you thinking of the long game in your business, or are you solely focused on short-term wins? Like when you think about yourself a year from now, or 5 years from now, or even 10 years from now, do you have a clear vision of where you want to be, who you want to be, and who you want to be with? Or are you someone who is stuck in the frenetic day-to-day routine, feeling overwhelmed and perpetually behind? My guest today is Dori Clark. She's been named three times as one of the top 50 business thinkers in the world by Thinker50 and was recognized as the number one communication coach in the world by the Marshall Goldsmith Leading Global Coaches Awards. A former presidential campaign spokeswoman, Dori has been described by the New York Times as an expert at self-reinvention and helping others make changes in their lives. She's also a frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, consults and speaks for clients including Google, Microsoft, and the World Bank, and is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of several books, including The Long Game. Since Dori has worn many hats in her career, which we'll discuss today, and she's written a whole book about long-term goal setting and future planning, she's teaching us how to reorient ourselves to see the big picture so that we can tap into the power of small changes that made today will have a huge impact on our future success. We discuss everything from why goal setting is important, how we can make sure our vision stays both clear and flexible, and how we can start to practice seeing a long-term plan for ourselves, our businesses, and more. This episode is truly jam-packed with everything you need to know about how to approach goal setting and achievement while staying grounded and present where you are. I cannot wait for you to hear it. Without further ado, Dori Clark, welcome to the Gold Digger Podcast. Oof, growing pains hurt. And when you're a marketer trying to generate leads for your brand new business, you know the pain all too well. Thankfully, there's HubSpot for Startups, a special program that gives startups discounts on HubSpot and so much more. But first, let's talk about the platform. The platform that unites your entire front office from marketing to sales to support. The platform that streamlines your support tickets, generates more leads, and increases sales. The platform that scales right along with you. Oh, and don't even get me started on the educational articles, industry reports, videos, tips, templates, literally everything founders need to help scale. HubSpot for Startups has it all. So get ready to build a brand everyone loves and make your startup growing pains a thing of the past. Visit HubSpot.com/startups to see how much you can save. That's HubSpot.com/startups. Dori, your latest book, The Long Game, is all about long-term goal setting. And I honestly think that so many entrepreneurs are focused on the day-to-day and what they need to get done today that they fail to even envision what they want long-term for their life, for their business, for their family. Walk me through, like, how can we actually start thinking in a different way, pulling ourselves out of the day-to-day minutiae to start to see the bigger picture? Where do we start with that?
Well, you're absolutely right, Jenna, that so many of us are just in this hamster wheel of all the meetings, all the emails, all the obligations, and you never really get a chance to breathe or even think. But I think it is essential to lift ourselves up and ask those bigger questions about what you're aiming at. Because the thing you don't want is to work incredibly hard for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and discover that you have succeeded at meeting the wrong goal.
Yes.
So ultimately, one of the things that I suggest is actually use jealousy in a positive way. People always talk about, you know, oh, jealousy's bad. It's terrible. It's terrible. But actually, I think it can be instructive in a lot of ways. I mean, of course, you don't want to obsess about other people or, you know, beat yourself up, but it's really useful to look at the people around you that you admire and say, you know, why not me? Or, you know, why is she doing this and I'm not doing that? I think we can use it as kind of a North Star for ourselves to see what's possible if we interrogate, well, why is it that I want a life that looks like her life? Or why is it that I want a business that looks like his business? If we can answer those questions at a deeper level, it actually can become a mirror that reflects ourselves and our desires back to us in a useful way.
Love this. And I love this reframe on jealousy because I think you are so spot on. When we are jealous and we have a level of consciousness around the jealousy, we can start to really identify what we actually want. And I think that in today's culture, there are so many things that are so shiny and interesting in these like quick hits of dopamine that people get so caught up in those little things that, like you said, they arrive to the mountain peak and they're like, I was climbing the wrong mountain all along. How did you get this idea for the long game? Where did this come from?
Pre-pandemic, I was finding myself all the time having conversations with people. And I'd, you know, ask them like a really simple question, like, hey, how's it going? Or what's going on? And almost invariably, really successful people that I knew kept saying some variation of, oh, it's great. It's good. I just wish I had time to think. I just wish I had a moment to breathe. And I heard it so often, it really made me stop and think and say, you know, look, these are people who are successful, who have more of a degree of control over their lives than most people in the world. And yet they are finding themselves systematically in a situation that if you ask them, you know, do you want your life to be like this? They would say no. And I really wanted to understand, well, what is going wrong? And why do we keep doing this to ourselves?
How did you dig into this? And have you been like a long-term thinker? Because when I wrote my book, How Are You Really? That's exactly the point of like, but how are you really? Because I think that we live in that world of like good, great, busy, all these things. And when you really get below the surface, you start to unearth things. So have you always been a long-term thinker? Like, is this something that came natural for you?
I'm pretty good at delaying gratification.
Same.
I think at the core, that's it, right? The, you know, there's the, you know, the famous Walter Mischel marshmallow study. You know, yes. Do you eat the marshmallow now or can you wait for two? So I feel like I've been pretty good about that. But also, it is a question that I really wanted to understand because I struggle with aspects of it too. Most notably, just filling up every crevice of my calendar. Because when we think about long-term thinking, it's not that long-term thinking, you know, takes some huge amount of time. It's not like, oh, it takes 10 times longer than short-term thinking. It doesn't. It takes basically the same amount of time. It's just a shift in your perspective. But it is a shift in perspective that is impossible to do if we are so busy, we can't rest ourselves from the present moment. And I found that, like a lot of people, to occupy myself, to bolster my self-worth out of habit, you know, a million reasons, I was making myself so busy, I was practically sick. And it meant that I didn't have enough time for the long-term thinking that I knew would be important and valuable.
You have reinvented yourself in a million different ways. Tell us a little bit about your story because you went from politics, journalism, bicycling advocacy. Like you have done a lot of different things. I feel like you've lived like a million lifetimes in one. Give us a little bit of Dory because I love the way that you are thinking. And I think we're going to go really deep on how a listener can think a little bit differently and pull themselves out of that day to day. But how did you get here?
Yeah, thank you, Jenna. And I mean, you're actually a fantastic exemplar of this as well. So we're both on the reinvention train in a lot of ways. But for me, and I wrote about this actually in my first book, Reinventing You, it was certainly not an intentional growth strategy. It would be nice if you know, retrospectively, I could say, oh, yes, this was the plan all along. It actually was a response to a bunch of hypotheses that I made about my life that did not pan out. And I had to adapt. So the first one was, I got a master's degree and I thought, this is great. I'll be an academic. You know, I'm just rocking it here. So I applied to several doctoral programs, got into none of them, which was a surprise to me. Yeah. That had not happened before. So I had to pivot and reinvent. And then I became a journalist and I really liked that. That was a great job, but I ended up getting laid off and couldn't find another job in journalism. I then pivoted into politics because I had been a political reporter. So I became a spokesperson on a governor's race, which we lost, and a spokesperson on a presidential race, which we also lost. So any of those maybe could have been my careers, but then they just weren't. So I finally got a job running a nonprofit. That was the Bicycle Advocacy Group. And it was through that, ironically, you know, this kind of super random career, that I realized, oh, wait, running a nonprofit is really basically the same thing as running a business. And then I thought, well, I could run my own business. And so now for 18 years, I've had my own consultancy and executive coaching and writing and speaking and you know, all that constellation of things.
I love that you're sharing the things that didn't work, because I think it is so easy to come on a podcast and most people know the success story, right? Like the hero's journey of like, and then, and I just love of like, I tried this and then this and then this. And I think this ties in really well to the long game, because when I even think of my own journey over the last 12 years, there have been so many pivots and reinventions and so many places where I'm like, I never thought I'd do that, but here we go. And so here's a question for you, because I often struggle with this and I'm curious if you do as well, is I feel like I couldn't have dreamt this life up 5 years ago. And I have trouble even imagining what my life will be like 5 years from now. And so how do we start to think more about this long game approach, even if we're struggling to have a vision for the future? Like, what can be the cornerstones or the pillars for us as we kind of elevate to this different way of thinking?
So in Silicon Valley, there's a concept that gets talked about or bandied about sometimes. And it's the idea of strong convictions lightly held. Ooh. And I really like that and find it useful, because for me, what it means is that you do need to have a kind of hypothesis about where you want your life to go. You need to be aiming towards something just so you're moving in the right direction. But it's also true that it might not be the definitive thing. I mean, you know, pretty much no one predicted there'd be a pandemic. And, you know, of course, that's a pretty large geopolitical, sociological phenomenon. But there's so many smaller things. I mean, you know, you don't know, in 10 years, you might be living in a different city or state, you might have, you know, different constellation of professional activities, your friends might look different. We just don't know. And so it's good to aim towards something, because that forward momentum that you're making is opening up new possibilities for you. It's also true something different or better might come along. And so it's just like a Silicon Valley investment, right? You say, yes, I'm going to invest in this. This is the course. But if new, different, or disconfirming evidence comes to light, you say, okay, I'm willing to change. I'm willing to adapt. And so for me, that's the idea. We've got to hold our hypotheses lightly.
Gold diggers, we all know the B2B landscape can be a bit complex. From lengthy buying cycles to complicated decision-making processes, reaching your target audience can be tough. But I found a solution tailored just for you. LinkedIn ads. A whopping 79% of B2B content marketers say LinkedIn produces the best results for paid media. That's because with LinkedIn ads, you're not just casting a wide net and hoping for the best, you're strategically building relationships and driving real results. We're talking about a platform with over a billion members, including 180 million senior level executives and 10 million C-level executives. You are networking with the actual decision makers. And LinkedIn's targeting and measurement tools are specifically designed for B2B marketers, meaning you're not wasting time or money on irrelevant leads. In fact, in the tech industry, LinkedIn ads have been shown to generate 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend compared to other social media platforms.
Using LinkedIn ads allows you to stay ahead of the curve when it comes to industry trends and developments, whether it's finding the perfect partner for a collaboration or uncovering new opportunities for growth. LinkedIn can be your secret weapon. Make B2B marketing everything it can be and get $100 credit on your next campaign. Go to linkedin.com/goal to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/goal. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, gold diggers. Lately, I've been getting excited to finish furnishing our new home, which is why I want to tell you about a brand that we absolutely love, which is Article. I have been a fan and a customer of Article for years. I'm always blown away by the curated assortment of furniture styles they offer. They have mid-century, modern, coastal, industrial, Scandinavian, and even boho designs. There is something for everyone, no matter your taste. In our last house, we had their sofa and leather chairs. At our lake house, we have their dining table and chairs. We also just ordered some of their outdoor furniture for our new patio. Like, if you can't tell, we are obsessed with Article. The quality and style are top-notch. Article's online-only model means that they can offer some great prices with fast and hassle-free delivery. Pick the delivery time that works for you, and they keep you updated every step of the way. Article's customer is also amazing. They're knowledgeable, friendly, and always there when you need them. If you're like me and you're itching to give your home a makeover, I highly recommend checking out Article. They believe in delightful design for every home, and thanks to their commitment to style, quality, and affordability, it's never been easier to transform your space. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/golddigger and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/golddigger for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
I love that. And I also just think too, it's like, you're not directionless. I think a lot of people these days, especially post-pandemic, where it's like, I don't know. I think we're living in this really interesting time where people want things immediately, whether it's results or, you know, their Uber Eats or whatever it is. We want things like at the drop of a hat, but we're also afraid to look too far into the future because we were rocked in this level of uncertainty that no one could have predicted. And so I feel like we're in this really interesting era where people want overnight success, but they also don't necessarily know how to think ahead in a long-term way of like, what does this actually look like? And what's reasonable? And what am I willing to do to get to this place? When you are thinking about like vision setting, do you have any practices or questions that you ask yourself to kind of help ground you? Because I often feel like that blank pageness of like, what is the vision board? Should I be looking at Pinterest? Should I be like, how do you kind of start to cast a vision?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. So going back to a topic that we were addressing earlier about, you know, kind of getting your head turned by other people and what they're doing. I think it's interesting. I mean, you and I actually met at a sort of, you know, like mastermind retreat where yep. we were talking with other authors. And I think that events like that, you know, gatherings where you're able to talk in a sort of trusted and supportive circle with other peers and colleagues are so important. Because if the only data that you're getting is somebody else's Instagram feed.
Yes.
Of course that's biased. Of course that is only the very, very best stuff. And you're sort of extrapolating out from there. Oh, he must own the Lamborghini. He couldn't possibly be renting that yes. Lamborghini. And it's just distorted. But yeah. if you actually have a group of trusted people who are colleagues, I mean, you know, so often people get sort of, you know, weird about it. They're like, oh, I don't want to share trade secrets with competitors. You know what? No one's your competitor. No yep. one yep. is your competitor. We compete against ourselves. We compete against people doing things for themselves. We compete against the ether. But if you find people that you trust, they can tell you how it really is. And it helps you make smarter and better goals to see what is possible for other people. I think that's a really crucial element because it comes from real data and not kind of fake suppositions or things that you're interpreting incorrectly because you don't have the full picture.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. I so agree. It's almost like too, you get the opportunity to peek under the hood and really say like, is this actually what I want? I always will remember this time when I was a wedding photographer and I saw one of my friends shot this wedding at the Eiffel Tower. And I was like, that is the dream. That is the dream. I want to do that. And then I started to reverse engineer all the things that went into shooting a wedding at the Eiffel Tower. I was thinking about her sloughing through the airport with all of her expensive gear. I was thinking about the time zone change and being jet lagged and figuring out transportation and where does she even set her bag near the Eiffel Tower. And I started to think of all these different things and how much time she was away from her family and all these things. And all of a sudden I'm like, that I don't want that. Like, give me a bingo hall in Wisconsin and I'm good because I'm back home by the end of Saturday night. And so I love that you're also just talking about like really thinking about like the big picture. And it's such an interesting world where we eat with our eyes first, right? Like we are so visually inspired. And so do you have any questions that you might ask yourself? Let's say you notice that ping of jealousy or you start to think like, okay, I think this is going to be the goal. Are there any like guidelines or structures or questions that we could ask ourselves to really get clear? Like, is this the right thing?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites, and this is a topic that I talk about in my book, The Long Game, is what I call optimize for interesting. And what I mean by that is, you know, so often in our culture, the default is to optimize for money. You know, what's the thing that can earn me the most money? That's, you know, that's good, although it certainly can lead us astray at times. And sometimes, you know, when we get fed up with optimize for money, we sort of shift to the opposite extreme, which is optimize for meaning. That's great too. You know, it helps lead you to charitable pursuits or things that are inherently meaningful. But the truth is, sometimes we just don't know. You know, there's a lot of conversation about the importance, you know, the sort of necessity of, you know, knowing your passion, following your passion. And that is wonderful if you know what your passion is.
Amen.
But a lot of people don't. Yes. And it can feel really shaming. It can feel really confronting if it's like, you know what, I don't really know what I'm put on earth to do. You know, can't help you. And so my advice for that in terms of identifying possible goals is lower the bar. It doesn't have to be your life's purpose. It doesn't have to be the most lucrative thing in the world. Just say, do I find it interesting? Would my life feel interesting if I were to be doing this for 8 hours a day, or if I were to be doing this for, you know, multiple years? Would that be interesting to me? And if it is, keep moving toward it. And if it's not, that's an opportunity to pivot. But I think with that bar, you know, you know if something's interesting to you or not. You can, you know, answer that pretty clearly. It doesn't have to be the, you know, the soul defining question, yeah. But it helps lead you on the right path, and it gives you enough information and data that you can make strategic shifts later if you want. That's the key question that I like to ask.
I think that's so powerful. And I feel like most entrepreneurs are creative and like visionaries. And so when we get that idea or that spark, it's so easy. You can get so lost in your work. All of a sudden you look up and it's dark outside and you have no idea where the day went. And I think a lot of people listening right now might be in the camp of like, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing today, 5 years from now. I cannot imagine my life if I'm still doing this. So let's pivot into this reinvention, because this is also a space where you speak so eloquently into. So what would you say to somebody listening right now where they're like, I pray to God I'm not doing what I'm doing today 5 years from now, and there's got to be a shift or a change and I have to reinvent?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, certainly a lot of people feel like that about at least aspects of their work. And what I often turn to is some interesting research by a professor at Harvard Business School named Teresa Amabile. She and her husband, Stephen Kramer, wrote a book called The Progress Principle. And they followed a number of professionals over time. And they really were trying to answer the question, what makes someone feel very engaged in their work? What makes them really feel like they're doing a great thing and they're excited about it and they feel good about their work and their lives? And what they discovered is that the answer is the people who felt the very best about their work and their life were the ones who made progress, even a small, tiny amount of progress on a project they perceived as meaningful every day. And for me, that's such a powerful lesson because it's true. I mean, people have obligations, they have financial or other obligations. And so you may not be able to quit that job tomorrow.
Yeah.
But over time, you can do it. It's just a question of, all right, can you spend 10 minutes a day doing something that will move the ball forward on the dream that you want to pursue? And if we can keep doing that, it's a message to ourselves that we are taking our dreams seriously and that, you know what, it might take longer than you want. A lot of things, unfortunately, take longer than we want, but you will get there because you are putting in the work.
Oh, I love that. I think that there's so much power in slow growth. And I, you know, my friend Tori Dunlap said the other day, like, everyone looks like an overnight success if you found them yesterday. And it's like such a true statement, because I think nowadays we're like discovering new people and, oh my gosh, they've done all these things. And it's like you missed so much of the journey. And I love the little progress. And I do believe too, it starts to shift your identity when you actually see yourself following through. I think identity plays a huge role. Let's talk about identity in that, because I can think of like one of my best friends in the world right now. And every time I'm with her, she hates her job. She's hated it since I've known her. And it's like, I just want to like shake her by the shoulders and like, you can change, like you can make a change. You're strategic, you're savvy, you're smart. You have everything necessary to not be in a career that you hate. And so I think identity plays a big piece in that. Tell me, have you ever had issues with shifting your identity, especially with all the transitions you've been through and the reinventions? Have you had to like clothe yourself in new identities from time to time?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. In some ways, I have not had identity shift problems in the sense that at least early in my career, when I was having this like very rapid fire identity shift because of reinvention, it was all forced. And so it was like, okay, well, I was a journalist. I guess I don't really have a choice now because I am not a journalist and no one wants to hire me. So, okay. I think sometimes having, you know, it's not fun to have your back against a wall, but when you do, it's highly clarifying, I guess you could say. But that being said, it's true that there are kind of identity hangover things. And one element where this really came up for me was in 2016, I actually decided, I kind of got inspired after seeing a Broadway show that I really connected with. And I decided that I wanted to learn how to write musical theater.
Ooh.
And this was something I had never done before. I had zero background in it, zero training in it. So I really was starting from the beginning. And it's a little tough, I think, for people who have built up some degree of professional success in other areas of their life, because you're used to being good at things. You're used to people sort of appreciating what you do and being like, oh, wow, that's so smart. That's so great. You know, and like, you know, we don't want to be the people that are all like that, but you know, I think just about every human is. Yeah. And so then you start a thing where you literally just have no idea. You have no clue and you're pretty bad at it at first. And so I was able to get myself, I got turned down the first year, but the second year I was able, through like sheer effort and hiring a coach even, to get myself accepted in a fairly prestigious musical theater training program. And the other people who were in it with me were actually really good. Like literally a number of them had already completed master's degrees in musical theater. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And so every week I would just come and be humiliated again and again and again. I felt like a punching bag, but I just had to lean into it and remind myself like, okay, Dory, you do not derive your self-worth from this. You derive your self-worth elsewhere. And it is okay to be a beginner. It is okay to not be good at every single thing in your life. And I had to keep re-reminding myself. That was the dose of humility.
I love that. I think that the last thing you just said, it's okay to not be good at everything in your life. I think so many people follow good, the things that they're good at. And I think that that can sometimes be the thing that gets them off course, because we can be good at a lot of things that we're not passionate about. We can be good at a lot of things that we don't really care about. And, you know, I feel like, especially for women, and this is a generalization, but I can speak from my own experience, we want to be like the good girl. We want to be good at things. We want to be recognized for different things. And oftentimes, like, that outside influence can really guide the path, right? Because you're hearing that feedback and you're like, okay, I'm good at this. I better keep going. And I think that that's what can often lead so many women to land at different pivotal places in their life and be like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, or like, this doesn't feel like I thought it would. What would you say is like the best way to start to harness the power of long-term thinking in our day-to-day lives so that it's not just a, you know, January 1st, I'm going to sit down and envision the next year and then I'll revisit this, you know, next January 1st and see how I did. How do we kind of integrate that into the busyness of our daily lives?
So one question, Jenna, that I like to ask myself that I feel like is very clarifying on an ongoing basis about this is, what is it I can do today that will make tomorrow easier and better? And there's a whole variety of ways this can play out. I mean, it actually ties in some ways to the agile methodology in business, which they talk about, which is, you know, you do a task once and then you should ideally like never do that task again. You want to set it up so that it can be systematized and repeated and things like that. And so, you know, for our own lives, it can be something as simple as, okay, if I want to go to the gym tomorrow, I should set out my gym clothes the night before so that's what I'm putting on because I know I'm going to the gym. You know, how do you streamline it? It could be, you know, trying to, I call it doing your future self a favor. Mm-hmm. What is it that, you know, future Dory would be like so happy that I did? And so sometimes it's just drilling down on the hard stuff like, oh, you know, so, it's so boring and like ridiculous paperwork to like, okay, I'm going to put in my retirement contribution for the year. I'm going to do it in January so that I don't have to like freak out in December. Like, oh, I've got to put it in. But, you know, I want to make things easier for myself in the future, not harder. And I think the more we can be asking ourselves what that looks like in our own lives, the better off we'll be.
Okay. So this leads me to my next question. I genuinely think that a lot of people are afraid to be quiet with themselves to even give themselves time to think. I believe that we're afraid of it because we're afraid of what will come up when we really get honest of like, what do I really want? And is this the right relationship, career, city? I don't know, all the things. I think there's this piece of us that we kind of numb out constantly. It's like how you can't even go pee without looking at your phone because you can't sit with yourself for 30 seconds. What would you say to somebody who could have the time to think long term, but isn't actually embracing that time or using that time or doesn't even know like what to do with that time? Because let's be honest, I think if we put our phones away, we'd all have a lot of time to do this work, but we might just be avoiding it.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. In fact, I did a TEDx talk a while ago that became kind of popular. They picked it up on the TED channel and more than 2 million people have watched it at this point, which is called The Real Reason You're So Busy and What to Do About It. And one of the studies that I talk about in it is one that was conducted by a woman named Sylvia Bellezza and her colleagues at Columbia University. And what they said, which I thought was pretty interesting and powerful, is that certainly in American society, it also spills over to other Western cultures, busyness has become a form of status. And in fact, it's become in many ways the most socially accepted form of status. You know, we kind of look down on somebody if they're, you know, flaunting their designer bags or whatever too much. You know, it's like, oh, you know, look at her. But all the time, you know, most of us even do this ourselves. People say, oh gosh, how are you? And you say, I'm so busy. Yes. Oh, I'm so busy. And we feel like that's an okay thing to say.
Yep.
But really what we're doing is we're telegraphing in a, you know, sort of polite way, quote unquote, I'm so desirable. Everybody wants me. Oh, I'm fully booked. And, you know, it's a little gross if we think about it that way, but a lot of us indulge in it. Used to until I read this study and then I'm like, oh boy, I better stop that. But what is telling for me about that is that I think that the big issue here is, you know, we ask ourselves, well, you know, I want my life to be less busy. I want to have more time to think. Why does it not happen? And yet we keep making the choices upstream to fill our calendars. And the problem is not the meetings. The problem is not the emails. Those are symptoms.
Yeah.
The problem is that essentially existential void that comes up when we don't have something booked and we say, well, gosh, Am I actually still successful? Am I actually still in demand? What does this mean for me and my life and my identity? And so we're busy to kind of cover that hole. So I think your point is really right on. And in order to deal with it, I think that ultimately, you know, we do use busyness as a way to not ask ourselves hard questions. So part of the scenario is becoming aware of that, of course, so that we can fight against it. And part of it is creating a space where, you know, maybe we're not addressing everything all at once,
right,
but, you know, slowly asking ourselves, get a container, asking ourselves targeted questions. You know, what are the things that bring me the most happiness? You know, look at your calendar. What are the things on a regular weekly basis that are most life-affirming for you, or are most productive for your business, or, you know, bring you the most personal satisfaction? How can you expand that? And if you say structurally there's not time for it, well, okay, is there something that you could let go that would allow for more of that? I mean, you know, start easy. Start with the things that make you happier, and then it enables you to clear away the chaff.
This is so good. I have been thinking about like deep work and this idea of deep work, and I hear people talk about it, and I have ADHD and two young children. And so there's often this place in me that's like, oh, that sounds luxurious. Like, how do you get into deep work? And I've been really intentionally crafting my schedule to allow for that more. And it's like one of those things where it's like, for so long, I was just like, just not in this stage of life. That's just not going to happen. And Fridays have become kind of a think day for me where I'm not working. We're doing 4-day work weeks. And so it's been this beautiful practice of like recalibration and stillness, which for me, it takes just as much work as working hard. It's probably even harder for me to be still than it is for me to go full steam ahead. And so it's been interesting to really kind of notice those rhythms and those tendencies. And I love that you bring up that awareness of like, first, just start with being aware that you are creating the busyness in your life and that you are in control of your calendar in many aspects. And I think that that's a powerful way for people to really kind of come back to themselves and their truths.
What does the stillness look like for you? Is it meditation? Is it like taking walks?
That's a great question. Okay. So on Fridays, my youngest daughter takes a nap from noon to 3. So that is my window of time. And so I'll usually take a sauna and then I'll do my cold plunge. And then I go and we have this bunk room at our house with just bunk beds. And for some reason, being in the bunk room makes me feel like I'm like in a cave. Like I go back to my childhood because I always had bunk beds and shared a room with my sister. And I will just lay there and I'll put in like just good like music and I just lay there. I just like make myself just lay there. And it's been so nice because for me, I used to like love to take naps. I used to not have any energy, which was a whole other thing. And now I can just like lay there and I put my phone away and I'm just listening to the music and I just think. And it's just such a simple and dumb thing, but it's something that so many of we don't make time for, just letting your thoughts wander and like following your thoughts where they go. And I think too, for me, as someone who has gotten into meditation in the last few years, just having an awareness around our thoughts is so powerful. If we go all the way back to the beginning of this interview where you talked about just having an awareness around jealousy, it's like when you bring that consciousness to your thinking and your thinking patterns, you can trace things to create the hypothesis. When you say that, Dory, like when you're like, I just have a hypothesis that I want to chase, I bet most listeners listening to this are like, I have zero hypothesis because I haven't even thought about it. And so I think that's really powerful. Do you have any certain practices that you do to just to get into more of like a thinking space?
Yeah. Also like you, I've become a super big sauna fan in recent years. Yeah. It's actually really remarkable because given the cultural importance of saunas in Finland.
So I'm Finnish. We're Finnish here. So my grandpa's 100% Finnish. I've been to Finland. So yes, I've been raised. So I was raised as like a little child in the saunas.
You're
like
OG sauna
I am an
goer.
OG sauna girl. Like we would literally be like 2 years old and going in. So anyways, continue. Yes, the cultural. I love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, so as a result, there's been a remarkable amount of medical research on the Finnish population about the benefits of sauna. And the cardiovascular benefits are actually enormous, yes. Which, I mean, if you're comparing it with like, okay, like killing yourself for 90 minutes on a Peloton, or like, oh, I can just sit and, you know, be warm and think. It's like, oh my gosh, why wouldn't we do that?
Yes.
So actually saunas have been magnificent for me. I've been doing that a lot, and it's a great space. Also because you can't actually take your phone into the sauna for very long, or yep. It overheats. So it's kind of a phone-free zone. But there's really interesting research by a Dutch researcher named Op Dijksterhuis, the ultimate Dutch name. And he talks about sort of innovation and creativity. And it turns out that there really is a scientific basis for, you know, why so many people feel like, oh, I get my best ideas when I'm walking or when I'm in the shower, yes. Or something like that. It's because basically, in order to make creative connections in your brain, you need to be just a little bit distracted. You can't be too distracted, but the best circumstance is that you're doing an essentially automated activity that occupies one part of your brain, but lets the other part free to roam. So driving, jogging, taking a walk, all of those things are actually fantastic for creative free associations.
Ooh, I love that. And I've heard so many people say, like, I get my best ideas in the shower. And it's also like, your phone isn't in the shower with you. Like, just that little connection alone should be like a signifier for us. I love this. Dori, where can everybody find out more about you, connect with you, get the long game and all of your other creations? Give me all of the places we can connect.
I love it, Jenna. Thank you. Well, probably the best place for people who are interested in long-term thinking is I have a free long game self-assessment, which you can get at doriclark.com/thelonggame. And I have more than 700 free articles available on my website that I've done for places like Harvard Business Review and Forbes and Entrepreneur. It's just available at doriclark.com. And I'm on all the social channels too. So I would love to connect.
Amazing. In a final question, what would you say for one listener who's like, all right, I'm ready to just kind of elevate to a different way of thinking? What's one piece of encouragement for them as they go?
Absolutely. So if someone really wants to become a better long-term thinker, one of my favorite frameworks that I like to think about and I talk about in the long game is heads up and heads down mode. Sometimes we beat ourselves up because we say, oh, you know, why am I not able to do this? Why am I not able to really be a long-term thinker? And ultimately, the good news is we don't have to be engaging all the time in deep long-term reflection. There are times when heads down mode is what's necessary, right? You're executing, you're doing it. But the problem comes when that's all we do, or we do it for too long. Because while your head's down, the circumstances in the sky around you could be changing. And we need to periodically lift our heads up to see what's happening and to understand if the terrain is different. And so I think I like to think of our lives and our professional lives as a cycle where sometimes we have to be heads up so we can take the pulse, see what's going on, see what opportunities have arisen. But we can't be there forever because if it's all just ideas, you never execute. So once we get the idea that seems right, then we go heads down to make it happen. But if we want to be successful, it's a question of cycling between those things in a kind of holistic way. And that's how we can actually be successful over the long term.
So good. Everybody, go grab a copy of The Long Game. Dori, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was such a treat.
This is great. Thank you, Jenna.
You are amazing. Since the moment that I met Dori, I imagined her coming on the podcast. I knew that you would learn so much from her, just as I have over this past year. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I could just listen to her speak all day. She is such a brilliant speaker and researcher. I hope you loved today's episode as much as I did. I love this idea of having this long-term vision and direction while loosely holding the plan. think it's such a beautiful approach to life, especially in this society where we wear busy as a badge of honor. I hope today challenged you to think about quiet time in your life and asking yourself those bigger questions. And I hope you have the tools and the tips that you need to start doing so today. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Gold Digger Podcast. If you have a minute to rate and review the show, it would mean the absolute world to me. And if you haven't yet, make sure you hit subscribe so you never miss another episode. And of course, until next time, keep on digging your biggest goals.
I'm over here giving you a virtual high five because you just finished another episode of the Gold Digger Podcast. Did that go by way too fast for anyone else? If you want more, head over to golddiggerpodcast.com for show notes and all the discount codes from today's sponsors. And if you're looking for a new crew of movers and shakers like you to bounce ideas and ask questions, be sure to join my exclusive community for gold diggers on Facebook. The link's waiting for you at golddiggerpodcast.com.